Paul Smith, our special guest tonight. We'll be back with him and find out exactly how you use dowsing for stocks. And we'll get into some other areas as well. Wars, just how to use it in your general day-to-day life. And we'll be back with Paul in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. All right, Paul, so you're trying to pick these stocks. What are we holding in our hand here?
Okay, so probably the best tool for this would be a pendulum.
Okay.
And again, remember, you're trying to maximize as much as possible the efficiency of the linked subconscious idiomotor effect to your pendulum, right, held in your hand. And so you would then, of course, phrase the question. You'd make very explicit what you want the question to be, and you need it to be very precise and try and have it as unambiguous as possible.
All right. Should I buy the XYZ stock?
That's one way of doing it, yes. Right. And that would be very precise. Well, no, you need also add when, right? Because if you should I buy, that could be anywhere for the next 10 years. So you would say, should I buy XYZ stock tomorrow or something like that?
You have to be specific like that,
yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah,
or within a week or something like that.
Yes, you specify the time frame.
Okay, so what now happens with the pendulum?
Okay, so you have the pendulum in your hand, and different people have different styles. One is that you actually have the pendulum swinging, and one thing you could do is actually the little diagram you talked about is the party lie detector thing you described. You could have a diagram set like that, and you could start off and have the pendulum swinging in a circle, and then it migrates to either going back and forth or frontwards and backwards.
You could say yes or no, okay, all right.
Could do that. Some people like to get it just swinging in a circle, and then if it reverses course, that's a yes, for example, right? I tend to lean towards a model where you have the pendulum perfectly still, and you concentrate to make sure it's completely still, and then you let it just start swing. Now, you can use your diagram, or you can already just predetermined that a back and forth is a yes and a 90 degree swing the other, you know, in a 90 degree direction from that would be a no or whatever it might be, right? And of course the goal is to try and be just as completely uninvolved in that swing happening. You want to make sure that your hand doesn't accidentally get it going, and you have to be very on. In a way, it can be almost therapeutic because you're having to be completely honest with yourself that, well, yeah, my fingers did twitch a little bit, whatever, right? You want to make very sure that you are completely honest with yourself in terms of what you're doing with that pendulum, because it needs to seem as if it is doing it by itself.
And if you ask it if you should buy it during a certain time period, if it says no, that doesn't mean you don't buy it. You might have to come back with another question. You might want to say in a month. Right?
Exactly. And in fact, you can key your questions in that way. So you already know in advance that you're going to have kind of a scale of a time frame. Should I buy it tomorrow? Should I buy it next week? Should I buy it next month? Whatever. So you get it going, and it says, if it tells you don't buy it tomorrow, then you say the day after tomorrow. You know, you might have the dates worked out, or Thursday, Friday. You know, yeah, you can't do it Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, right? And at some point, it may actually indicate a day. Okay, that's a good day to buy it, or that's next month. It's better to buy it next month than it is now, or whatever. You can also, of course, have an end question to keep you having to go through the entire calendar for the next 50 years. You can have an end question like, should I ever buy this stock?
Okay, so you can get that specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And off you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, of course, we're talking here in a predictive mode. And predictive dowsing has the same drawbacks as predictive remote viewing, in which if you're trying to do an open-ended predicting the future, the future doesn't exist yet. And so there's all kinds of possible futures, and you may end up predicting the wrong one, and then you're wrong, right? So make sure that what you're trying to predict is something that actually will have an outcome that you can actually know the value of. So a stock is a good example of that, because you will know if it tells you not to buy it tomorrow and tomorrow the darn thing crashes, you know that the pendulum was right.
If it goes up 10 points,
then
it got you.
That's right. Well, you may have phrased it wrong, because if it goes up 10 points, maybe you should have bought it today instead, right? So that's where your question asking, you have to be very careful, right, to make sure that you you pick the right time frames to what you're going to douse for.
Are these events with consequences? Remember that old Twilight Zone part where, you know, guy wished for whatever he wanted, but they were always with consequences. He wanted money, but I guess, you know, some catastrophe happened. He wanted to be very powerful.
He turned into Hitler.
There's always a
black lining to that silver cloud in those kind of scenarios. Yeah. Well, you know, as far as I can say, from my experience, if you do this with good intent, there aren't any compensating downsides. It's the idea of for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Okay. That works in rocketry, but as far as I can tell in dowsing, as long as your intent is good, there isn't some kind of corresponding bad result. That it's just like anything else. You do some kind of action, you take some kind of action, and your intentions are good, and you're not trying to hurt anybody. Generally speaking, you're not going to have a bad outcome from that. Obviously, there's always the law of unintended consequences. There's times when bad outcomes happen just because we don't examine the possible results well enough. But in general, there don't seem to be any downsides. So.
All right, so that's that. Let's look at this BP oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
Can dowsing help that at all?
Well, you know, once the cat is out of the bag, it's awfully hard to get him back in, even with some, you know, an added leverage thing that that some kind of ESP can give you. It's possible that, of course, no one at BP is going to try this. It's possible that if you have a range of possible solutions, you could conceivably douse for the one that would be most effective. And so that would be good. Now, where dowsing might have been helpful was before it happened. You know, douse the future status of the rig, for example, you know, or you could really use your imagination in all kinds of different ways you could apply this. So that's what I'm doing now. Obviously, I've not been involved in any kind of oil well blowout. But if in that setting, for example, if you're worried about you're doing some kind of risky thing, and in fact, that's really what's happened here, isn't it? With BP, what they were doing is they were gambling that they could, or whoever was involved in this, or gambling that they could cut certain corners and not have any negative consequences. And they probably won that gamble many times in the past. But this is one time when the gamble didn't pay off. You know, they actually got hit by it. And so, you know, in a scenario like this, if you were into dowsing and you're a BP official, you might say, okay, there's certain risks with this procedure. I've taken some shortcuts with the regulations, but in the interest of having a more efficient process, let me douse the outcome here and see if this is a bad idea or a good idea. And then you kind of go through a decisional dowsing process, kind of like I've described. So, I mean, it could have been useful in that setting, potentially. And maybe they wouldn't have tried something that they did try if they had had that kind of forewarning. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Are a lot of people practicing dowsing?
Yeah, there are a lot of people. And of course, if you look at it in proportion to the population, it's not a lot. But in terms of a lot of other practices, for example, there are many more dowsers than there are remote viewers. Of course, it's also been a skill that's been around a lot longer than remote viewing has as well. It's also generally easier to acquire than remote viewing. Remote viewing requires an awful lot of practice. Dowsing does too, but the processes in it you can learn fairly quickly and fairly easily, of course, with the right kind of introduction to it. So, generally, you do find more people dowsing.
Now, if you had your choice between dowsing and remote viewing, which would you use at any particular time?
Well, that, of course, would depend on what needed to be solved. If I was looking for information and not a location, I would use remote viewing. If I needed a description of a certain setting or certain facts about a certain environment, a certain person, place, or thing, event, whatever, remote viewing, hands down, would be what you want to use. if instead I was looking for something that was missing, while remote viewing can be useful there, yet that isn't one of its strong points. Remote viewing is descriptive. You would be able to describe the setting of the missing object or the missing person, but unless somebody actually recognized that setting, you really wouldn't have helped much, right? Dowsing, however, is optimized for trying to find missing things, which is why we actually incorporated the two of them at Fort Meade. This is, by the way, something I go into on that free DVD I was talking about. I talk a bit about how we use this in conjunction with remote viewing to try and find things. So, for example, we might be asked to locate a hostage in the Middle East, right?
All right.
We don't know where the hostage is. Remote viewing, we describe him, well, he's in this room in a white building with a flat roof and a whole area full of rooms with white buildings with flat roofs. Okay, well, that's not very helpful. So then we would remote view, we'd identify the target, and then once we'd identify the target, then we would go to dowsing to try and actually physically locate. Remote viewing, I like to say, you can find things, you can't locate them. Dowsing fills that niche. It can help you locate things much better than remote viewing can.
You talk about two general strategies where dowsing, you say, can give you an edge. What are they?
Well, overall two strategies, you can enhance your chances for success. Okay, so it's an enhancement strategy. Okay, or you can avoid problems, disasters, or whatever. And those are not mutually exclusive, but they are kind of two different approaches to how you use dowsing. So enhancing your chances of success. We kind of talked about that, at least an example of that, in the dowsing stock kind of example. Now, you can use it then, on the other hand, to avoid negative situations or wrong choices. Okay, the BP oil platform example is a way of avoiding a negative consequence. But you can use it, of course, that's a fairly arcane thing.
It's almost like insurance, isn't it?
It is, in a way. In fact, you could think of it as, well, it's like insurance, it's actually better than insurance. Because insurance, the purpose of insurance is to help you get through or get over the consequences of a bad occurrence, a disaster or something. Dowsing can help you avoid that in the first place.
Right.
Okay, and so it actually in some ways can be more useful within the limitations that dowsing or any of these other kinds of things have. So let's try and think of something that's a little less abstract than the BP oil platform, because very few people are involved in those, right? So in your everyday...
Let's do the old horse race thing. If I can, all right, because that's in simple terms, easy to understand.
So this would be an example of an enhancement strategy. You're trying to enhance your chances of success. If let's say you are going to bet on a horse race, obviously one of those horses is going to win. You want to bet on the horse that's going to win. That's the ideal outcome. And under normal circumstances, let's say you didn't know anything about horse races, you would have, if there's 10 horses running, you'd have one chance in 10 of just guessing the correct horse. With dowsing, you can set it up to where you douse which horse is going to win. It increases your odds dramatically. It isn't going to work 100% of the time. You're not going to get the correct horse 100% of the time. But you can increase the number of times you're going to pick the correct horse, which means ultimately you're going to make money in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the strategy I use with the pick three lottery. I douse the lottery. Now, I have to tell you, I haven't won it yet. But in fact, a couple of times I've gotten, and I didn't realize you actually got paid out if you got two numbers in the correct spots. Dang it. I realized that I would have made some money off of this.
It's an exacta, I think.
Yeah. So I've gotten two numbers out of three correctly numerous times.
If you want three, you want the trifecta.
You want three. You want three. I haven't hit three yet, but I have hit two. And actually, if you hit three on a dollar bet, you make $500. If you hit two in the right order on a dollar bet, I'm thinking it's around $80 you get, something like that.
Well, it depends on the odds.
It depends on the odds, but in the pick three, it's pretty fixed. Right.
Right? Okay. It depends on how many people bet. I mean, it's all pool related.
I don't think that's the case with a pick three. It's a fixed reward.
Okay.
If you
All
get
right.
Yeah, if you get it. But obviously, you're right about, the bigger lotteries, but those things are so complicated. Trying to douse a large lottery, there's so much
And you
involved in
have to go
that.
through like each number for each section.
That would be probably the main approach, yeah, which is why I stick with the pick three. It's a lot simpler to do just three digits instead of a whole bunch.
Well, now let me ask you that. Let's be a little more specific here. If you're trying to pick numbers from 1 to 10, do you have to say one and it, yes, no, two, yes, no, or does it?
No, in fact, that's a almost prescription for failure, because at some point your left brain is going to kick in and it's going to decide which number it
Right.
wants it to be.
You want it to find the number on its own, right?
Yes.
So you have to have the numbers written out, though, right?
No, and we're actually going to do this at the remote viewing conference that's coming up here in.
Well, how do you know what number it's picking?
Well, that's what I'm going to explain, okay? As an exercise, I'm going to actually teach people how to do the pick three lotto using, using a pendulum at the remote viewing conference that's coming up. And what you do is you have a set of squares. You have 10 squares. So it's like this continuum across the page, 10 squares. And then you assign randomly numbers to those squares, but you keep the numbers, you don't label those squares with the numbers. You just douse the square and you mark which square you think it is, and then you match the numbers up with the squares, and that's the number you pick, each digit. And so, but the problem, what you have to do is once you've doused that and you randomize numbers and you pick that number, then you put them all together, and that's the one you bet. But what you have to do afterwards is then, once you get the correct number, and whether you get it right or not, you need to mark the correct box. And so you're essentially giving yourself feedback on your dowsing success or failure here, right? So you dows the box, you match it with your random numbers, you select the numbers that way, but then after the fact, let's say you end up picking 639. Then you, using that same key, you go back and you maybe, there's lots of ways you can do it, but you can put a big X in the correct box, and that's feedback to you that that's the one you should have doused. And if you really did douse it, then you're in good shape.
Do you use this every day?
No. Part of the problem is you have to be able to concentrate, and then when I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off, I can't concentrate. And so
But if you were going to make a big decision, would you use it?
If I really am in a fix and really need some information, I will set aside some time that I can concentrate and use it. And I do use it sometimes for decisions. Well, I use it for decisions, again, where I don't have enough information to make the right decision, but I have to make a decision. I'll just
Gives
look
you
at
that
it.
little edge, huh?
Yes, exactly. And of course, when I'm experimenting with it, trying to work beat the lottery or whatever, then of course I do it. And when I'm missing something, I mentioned my first key instance. I became pretty good at finding keys. I found them for a lot of different people, and I found missing sprinkler parts. And my garage. You see my garage. It looks like an explosion in a munitions factory, I
And I
guess.
guess you could test it by having someone hide keys from
You
you, right?
could. In fact, back when I was going to the dowsing meetings there in Baltimore, I took my kids with me to one, and they had a little dowsing game where they put silver half dollars in plastic bags and hid them in the park across the street. And my son James found both of them using dowsing. He was about, I think, 12 at the time, maybe 10, something like that.
That is amazing. Paul, give out your websites, would you?
Okay, the primary one tonight of interest is the Learn, I'm sorry, freedowsingdvd.com. And it's very simple to remember, freedowsingdvd.com. And folks can go there and they can get a free dowsing DVD. This is no joke. They really can get it. And I think they'll find it very useful and very important. I strongly recommend they do that. There's no strings attached. And that will help them understand dowsing. It'll give them important information about this process. And so if we're on and I'm talking about this again in the future, they'll already have a leg up. Plus, they may actually identify ways they can apply it in their lives.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to come back and take some phone calls with Paul Smith, Remote Viewing and Dowsing. That's next with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls now with Paul Smith as we talk about remote viewing and dowsing. All that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, as you write in Reading the Enemy's Mind that we use about 10% of our brains, if you're really a good remote viewer or tuned in, what does that increase to, that percent, do you think?
Well, that's really tough to measure. But obviously, if you're exercising a skill and an ability that you haven't in the past, obviously you're already increased your capabilities. How do you measure that? I don't know. 2%, 10%, 90%. Well, it's not going to be 90%.
No. If it is, you're a pretty good remote viewer. Huh?
That's right. Maybe Joe McMonigle uses 90%.
Yeah, that could be.
It dawns on me that I ought to mention something quickly about the remote viewing conference. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
We've got an amazing lineup this year. We've got folks that I've been trying to get actually since we first did the first conference. Brenda Dunn and Robert John, the folks from the Pear Lab, which many folks know about. These are real pioneers in ESP and psychokinesis and all that. And they have consented finally to come and talk to the conference. And that's going to be great.
That's a good way. Now, when is it?
It's the 18th, 19th, and 20th of June at the Green Valley Resort in Las Vegas. And you can find out about it by going to rvconference.org. Oh, no, I take that back. We have a new URL. It's irvaconference.org.
Yeah, it's IV, right?
Yeah.
IRVA.
Yeah, irvaconference.org. And, I'd love to see you there. I'm going to do a workshop on dowsing, introductory workshop on dowsing, so you actually put into practice some of the things we've talked about tonight.
You're going to be there with all the stuff?
I'll be there with a lot of stuff. Everybody gets a free pendulum.
All right. Let's go to the calls.
Okay.
We'll go to Dallas, Texas to get things going east of the Rockies. Charles, you're on with Paul Smith. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, howdy. George, just want to let you know you're an awesome successor to Art Bell.
Well, thank you, Charles.
And I just found another use for dowsing.
Oh.
And that's being able to have the ability to pick up the phone at the right time to get a first call into you. I've been calling for months.
Perfect.
But anyway, aside from that, I have a question for Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to something I witnessed at East Texas State back in 1982. And it was I was raised by a forensic pathologist, so I didn't believe in any paranormal stuff at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a week. You know, you get to college as a freshman, you got that little week there where they orient you to leaving the womb and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the entertainment things they had this night was a hypnotist remote viewing guy by the name of Gil Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And he was amazing. I mean, he was able to read the serial numbers from $20 bills and all that stuff, blindfolded. And but one of the greatest parts of it was his hypnotism. He hypnotized several people. I think it was seven or eight of them. And I remember three of them in particular. And one of them was, I'll just mention one of them, and then I'll take my answer off the air and let y'all move on because I'm a talker. But anyway, what he hypnotized this one girl who I later met and who was a hoot, he convinced her that her name was Shredded Wheat and that there was no number seven. So hypnotizes her, have her do her thing, and she comes out, and he says his magic word, and, she's up, and he asks her, so what's your name? Shredded. He says, what's your full name? Shredded Wheat. And, she says it just like she's been using that since she was old enough to know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, well, count your fingers. She goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11. 1, 2. She does that several times, and she's freaking out. There's only 10. And I was just wondering if there's any connection between dowsing, remote viewing, and things of that nature, and hypnotism. And I'll take my answer off the air. And
okay, thanks. Interesting question. Obviously, there's a connection because the fascinating thing about hypnosis is it shows just how powerful the subconscious mind is. it's just amazing what people can be conditioned to do using hypnotic induction. And in fact, of course, there's many of those same capabilities that get applied in dowsing and remote viewing both. So one of the questions, I think maybe it was leading this way, people ask, well, does hypnosis then help you be a better remote viewer or a better dowser?
I would think it would.
You would think it would. I don't know if it does. My answer to this is I don't know. They actually did some research on hypnosis and remote viewing at SRI back in the 80s, and they did not find much of an effect. It didn't seem to help. But it was a very small sample. They didn't repeat the experiment, and there were some things done in the experiment that I think they would have been better had they done it differently. So the court is still out on dowsing, or excuse me, on hypnosis and its impact on any kind of ESP results. But I think there are some very interesting experiments that could be done to find out how hypnosis may or may not help.
Are other countries still dabbling with the remote viewing?
Well, if you believe the Indian press, the Indian government is.
Tell me that story.
Well, periodically, the Indian some of the Indian newspapers will release stories about things the Indian government has done, their military, that involve remote viewing. Again, I've not seen independent confirmation that's going on. And you always wonder, well, is this kind of a Pravda effect? Like the Pravda newspaper in the Soviet Union is always reporting stuff, former Soviet Union, and during the Soviet Union days, always reporting stuff that actually, if you try and track it down, there's no substance to it. I don't know. Now, there are stories that some other countries are doing it. China is one of the primary suspects, the usual suspects, if you will. There's some talk that some folks in Japan maybe. Of course, Sony Corporation was actually exploring lots of different ESP kinds of things for a long time. They spent quite a bit of time and money on that. That's since been folded up, unfortunately, similar to the Pear Lab. So I don't know. Of course, the interesting thing about it is if a government is involved in remote viewing and is pursuing it, they're usually not going to tell the public that they're doing it. And so it's not a surprise that we don't know much about what they're doing and whether other governments are involved. So,
all right, let's go to Eric in Montana on the wildcard line. Hey, Eric, go ahead.
Hey, George. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Mr. Smith. I just had a question as far as I was wondering if there's any limit to remote viewing as far as getting into, say, a conversation or a meeting and kind of getting verbatim what's being said or maybe the same thing as far as the dialogue in someone's own psyche. Or I was just wondering how exact you could...
Yeah, it's unlikely that you're going to get verbatim material. Remote, of course, because reproducing verbatim conversations involves the left brain, and the left brain is the big troublemaker in remote viewing, because the left brain, of course, is the analytic side of it, and it's always that's half of mental, well, perhaps even more, of the mental noise that gets in the way of accurate remote viewing. The right brain is the primary, if you will, conductor, I guess, of remote viewing signals, and it isn't lingual. It doesn't deal with language. And so what you often get is the concepts. We did in the past at Fort Meade, we were on a fairly regular basis targeted on meetings and comings together of like terrorists or narco traffickers or even political bodies such as the Politburo or whatever. And we, of course, those were oftentimes in all other languages than any of us spoke, and so you would expect it not to be verbatim in that case. But generally what we got was the conceptual content. We didn't get, so-and-so said this, and then so-and-so said that. We got, this was the topic of the conversation. This was the gist of what they were trying to get at, that kind of thing. And I think that's the most you can expect from remote viewing, because it isn't like a tape recorder. It isn't like a bug on a telephone that you can intercept the exact conversations. It's a bit more ethereal than all of that. So,
all right. Thanks. Craig in Mesa, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Craig, you're on with Paul Smith.
It's Mesa, Arizona.
Mesa.
Yeah, I've been dowsing since the 70s. And in the 80s, I met a Jesuit brother who was actually dowsing for the Jesuit Church. He gave me some insight into some dowsing, and he actually had me buy the book by or about Abbey Mermet. But my question is, how do you overcome the subconscious effect? I've noticed that depending on whether I go right or left or up or down or around in a circle, there are times I feel that there is a subconscious effect that'll give you an answer that may or may not be correct, and I'll take the answer off the air.
Well, wait, before you go, I think I need to understand this a little better. Subconscious effect gives you the wrong answer? Is that
what you're saying? The subconscious effect in that it drives the pendulum to give you that answer that you may want.
Oh, I see. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, and the interesting thing is that actually isn't subconscious. That's actually more of a conscious awareness level kind of a thing.
Because you're doing it, aren't you?
Yes, you are. You're consciously controlling things. Now, the desire for that may arise right very close to the subconscious, such that you aren't really aware that it's a conscious awareness thing. But the subconscious itself, well, now I take that back, because there are sometimes the subconscious may in fact drive things in a certain direction that it wants as well. I mean, it's always possible. We have a lot of drives and motivations and things that emerge out of our subconscious. I mean, that's what all of Freudianism is based on, although I think a good share of Freudianism is suspect, is suspicious. Nonetheless, he was onto some things that were right. So it's possible the subconscious might do that, but in most cases, it's the conscious awareness that is actually driving it, and that's what in remote viewing we call analytical overlay, where the left brain takes charge, it decides what the answer is, and gives it to you, and it turns out to be the wrong answer. And that can happen in dowsing as well. And how do you overcome that? Well, of course, practice is one way. You know, always doing, you know, practicing dowsing in settings where you can get feedback so that you can evaluate and assess how well you actually did. And being aware, just aware that the conscious mind can drive these kind of things. And so when you create the tasking you're going to give yourself, be very careful to specify exactly what your expectations are. As we talked about in the stock picking case.
Does fear make you a better remote viewer or dowser?
You know, I don't know if anybody's actually tried to find that out. So I'm just basically going to say what I think makes sense here. I think that a little bit of fear might actually enhance it, just like a little bit of fear actually enhances any behavior, right? You're motivated.
Kicks that adrenaline in.
Exactly. But too much fear can actually detract. Again, if you're too emotionally involved, and fear, of course, is an emotion. If you're too emotionally involved, it could end up detracting. So,
what do you prefer, dowsing or remote viewing, if you could only use one?
If I had to pick only one, you know, I was first a remote viewer, and I've been a remote viewer much longer than a dowser. I feel like I'm probably a better remote viewer than I am a dowser. That doesn't, of course, necessarily tell you how good a dowser I am, but I just, because I've been practicing it longer, I feel like I'm more in command of it, right? But fortunately, there's no need to make that choice. You can do both. In fact, they harmonize together very well. And oftentimes, in operational settings, when you're doing a real-world remote viewing for a client or whatever, if there's a locational problem involved, you do use dowsing right hand-in-hand with the remote viewing process.
All right, next up we go to David, truck driving in Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
I was wanting to know how you determine the yes and no answers when you're using the pendulum for dowsing.
Okay.
How do you know if it means yes and if it means no?
There's two ways to do it. Some people like to let the pendulum tell them what yes is and what no is. So you basically phrase the question something like this: show me yes, and then whatever the pendulum does in response to that is yes. Show me no, and whatever it does in response to that is no.
And generally, is that up and down and left and right?
Actually, I would say probably in most cases, because, of course, we are slaves to convention,
yeah,
you know, just by nature. But some people, it will be different. Another way you can do it, though, is you can then tell the pendulum what you want to be yes and what you want to be no. It works better for some people, and other people find the other way better. You just have to experiment and see what works best for you.
I would think conventionally up and down is a little easier,
Yeah, probably just because it corresponds to kind of like nodding your head. Now, of course, in Asia, a head nod doesn't always mean yes. Yes may be indicated by something else. And so in those places, they may use their pendulums differently.
So what does the waiter or waitress do to you if you're undecided for whatever you want for lunch or dinner at a restaurant, and you pull out your little pendulum and you go, should I have the chicken or the turkey?
How fun would that be? I've never actually
They'd throw you
that.
Out, wouldn't they?
Well, it depends on whether they expected to get a good tip out of you or not.
Well, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Alexandria, Louisiana, it's our friend Cornelius on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. God bless you, and God bless you there, Mr. Paul Smith.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, you know, we're about 200 miles from New Orleans, and I hope that all the Coast to Coast listeners will pray for New Orleans, because this looks like it's going to be worse than Katrina.
No doubt.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt.
And I wanted to thank you, George, for letting those people come on and talk about it. And Larry King Live was showing some stuff saying that it's going to be pretty bad.
Well, we're not going to stop, Cornelius.
Well, I appreciate that. And Tommy, your call screener. You know, some of y'all been down there for Mardi Gras and stuff, so y'all know that New Orleans is a real fun place.
Went down there for the Navy once. Had a great time.
I didn't even know that, George.
Oh, yeah, long, long time ago.
Yeah, I was a military.
I think we had sail ships, though.
All right, George.
Not oars?
Yeah.
But I was just wondering, I told Tommy, I was wondering if have you or any of your remote viewers reviewed this thing between North Korea and South Korea?
Is it
going to
blow up?
War?
Good question.
So God bless you. I'll take
my
answer
thanks,
off.
Thanks, Cornelius. Have you looked at any of that, Paul? I mean, do you take current events on your own and just say, well, what's going to happen here?
I don't generally, because, first of all, you're front-loaded in that case, and I do not believe in remote viewing front-loaded. I think that it kind of negates the value of it. Yeah, that's interesting. Now, that's something you could douse, for example, and I might be even tempted to try that. You could douse, is there going to be a war, is there not? Again, of course, that's a forward-looking future kind of a thing, but again, you can get feedback on that, so it becomes almost like a social remote viewing. You are going to know whether there's going to be a war or not. Of course, again, if you set that dowsing experiment up, you do it in such a way that you would have an end time on it. So is there going to be a war in the next 6 months between the two Koreas, something like that? And then if you wanted to refine it more, you could say, okay, I know there's going to be one in the next 6 months. So is it going to be in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, something like that? You could try that experiment and see how it turned out.
Interesting. Okay, Paul Smith is with us. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Author, Reading the Enemy's Mind, and of course, Learn Dowsing Course. Give it a try. See what happens. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, it's george@coasttocoastam.com. It's that simple. And Paul is going to put together a little test. We'll have it for you eventually. We're going to put it on the coasttocoastam.com website, and it will be a remote viewing test, and we'll see how good you are. But we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.